Good afternoon, Your Honors. Eric Samler, Attorney Registration Number 32349, here on behalf of Mr. Moore. The reason why I requested oral argument today in this case was because I think the issue of whether the court's refusal to give the provocation interrogatory was erroneous needs to be expounded upon. So that is the issue that I'll be focusing on. I think the remaining issues, I believe, and I hope, have been fully and adequately addressed in the opening brief and the reply brief. As for the speedy trial issue, I believe that that issue, while perhaps maybe one of first impression, I do think it's being a legal issue purely. I don't think that that argument would elucidate on it. However, if you have any questions on that, I'm, of course, willing to do my best to try and answer those questions. In looking at the provocation issue, it's important that the proper standard of review be applied, as I believe, as in most cases, that will be outcome determinative. In fact, the major error the trial court made here was in the standard of review it applied in determining whether Mr. Moore was entitled to a provocation interrogatory. The request was made for the interrogatory, argument was held, and the court ruled. Thus, the court must look at the entire record to determine whether there is some supporting evidence to support the giving of the interrogatory. In the words of Cassell v. People, the interrogatory should be given if there's any evidence, and I quote, regardless of how incredible, unreasonable, improbable, or slight it may be, to establish each factor. In fact, in Cassell, the court made clear that in determining whether a defendant is entitled to the instruction, the court must consider the evidence in the light most favorable to the defendant. Therefore, it's not up to the trial judge to determine credibility. It's not up to the trial judge to weigh the evidence, nor is it to make a determination whether he or she would find provocation. Instead, the court should have simply looked at whether there was some evidence presented that would support the giving of the instruction. However, what the court did here was look at the evidence that, in its mind, disproved some of the elements of provocation, and then, after concluding that it believed provocation was disproved, refused to give the instruction. Of course, the court didn't necessarily say that, but that's essentially what happened. But the only evidence the court should have looked at was the evidence that supported it. Therefore, the question is not whether the court believes that the facts were highly provoking, whether it believes there was sufficient time for the voice of reason to interject itself, but rather whether there was evidence presented from which the jury could find sufficient provocation. And if it had done this, it would have been clear that sufficient facts were presented.
Mr. Samuel, was there evidence that the defendant was, in fact, overcome with enough emotion or anger or whatever you want to call it to describe it as heat of passion?
Well, yes, I believe there is. And let's look at what the facts are. Let's look at what the testimony is. According to Damian Moore's testimony, he and his brother Dallas, they went over to see their mother. Damian testified that he had a sister who had died of a cocaine overdose, that he observed that his mother was clearly under the influence of drugs, although she denied it, that they were having this little talk when these two individuals called out and asked him whether or not his mom was buying drugs from these two people, clearly the implication being that they were selling drugs, and the implication being as well that they were selling drugs to their mother. And then they were accused of encroaching on their drug territory, on encroaching on their territory. Words are exchanged, and Damian tries to leave. He gets in the car and actually tries to leave. And then these two individuals step in front of the car. At that point in time, Damian gets out, arguments ensue, but at that point in time, when he's getting out of the car, unfortunately, he didn't put the car in park, so the car lurched forward. This, of course, escalated things because he was accused of being of trying to run over these guys. Argument ensues more, and at that point in time, that's when the fisticuffs happen. And I believe when you look at it, whether or not someone has a sibling who dies of a drug overdose, whose mom is clearly on drugs, and who had otherwise promised that she wouldn't do this, that these two individuals come out, who the inference being, I think it's a safe inference, that they're in that neighborhood selling drugs, mom lives in that neighborhood, clearly she's buying drugs from them, and then they're accused of it. I think that's sufficient provocation. I think that's a jury question of whether that's...
But let's just dissect it a little bit. Temporally.
Okay,
there's the initial words about the mom using drugs, etc. And then you said that Damian tried to leave.
He did.
And so doesn't that trying to leave suggest an interval of time passage?
Well, that's not for the jury to make that determination. It's not for the judge to make that determination. Factors are presented. Whether or not the jury wants to believe that's sufficient or not, so be it. But it's not for the judge to make that, to usurp the jury's function, to make that factual determination of whether it believes that there was sufficient time. I think under the factual situation, the jury could have made that finding.
And then let's go to the second part where words were had and the argument ensued, and then Damien got out of the car.
Mm-hmm.
Dallas got out of the car a little bit later.
Mm-hmm.
Was there evidence that showed that Dallas wasn't making more or less a conscious choice to get out of the car, but rather that he got out in some sort of impassioned emotional state?
Well, what happened at that point in time when Damien was involved in the argument, there were two individuals there, both of them pointing their fingers at him, the hand getting smacked down. He simply got out because he was afraid that Damien was going to get jumped. It was a two-on-one situation. He was just standing there. And then what happened when Damien was the one who, whatever happened between there, there was the push, there was the punch. And at that point in time when Dallas looked over, this is what Dallas testified to, he actually got swung at. So whether or not that's enough for provocation, I don't know. Obviously, they rejected the self-defense claim, but that doesn't mean it's not enough necessarily for provocation.
And did Dallas testify that he engaged in the fight because he was so mad he couldn't think clearly or something to that effect?
Let's see what Dallas testified. I'm not sure if Dallas himself testified to it. I think you need to look at the whole situation with regard to that. I'm not sure if he said he was so mad. I think you need to look at what he testified to. And he did testify to that his brother did ask his mom about using drugs and about the guy stepping in front of the car and start, quote-unquote, mouthing off, saying something about how they were playing with his money and stepping on his toes. You know, to translate into English, of course, meaning that he thought these guys were there selling drugs in their neighborhood, which is clearly not the case at all. So whether that's enough in and of itself, I don't know. You have to make that. I don't think Dallas needs to necessarily say, I was so overcome. I think you need to look at the evidence and whether or not the jury makes that determination, whether or not that's sufficient provocation.
Well, let me give you a hypothetical, and I understand that this is not what the record necessarily reflects.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say that there is a circumstance where there might be a heated response, but the defendant testifies and his testimony indicates that he was acting fairly calmly, that he was making decisions about whether or not to help his brother in the fight or whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
Then would it be a jury question, or what would the status be in that configuration?
Well, I think you need to look at, I think under that situation, you need to look at the entire record. And that's what the court needs to do. It needs to look at the entire record. You can't parse things out whether or not this individual said, I was so overcome by emotion that this is what happened. You need to look at everything that led up to it, and that includes other testimony in support of it. And I think that's when the court says that you need to look at the entire record and look at the evidence that's there, that's in support, that supports a provocation instruction.
So if the defendant testified that he was calm, but the jury,
yes,
I suppose,
if he testified, none of that affected me whatsoever. Well, that's a different situation. I think under that situation, you have something where he's saying, well, yeah, but it didn't affect me whatsoever. Dallas never testified to that. That's not anything he said, that I was calmly sitting there. And just because that's the way he didn't come across as heated in his testimony, maybe as his brother, that doesn't necessarily mean that's how those events transpired for him. So I think with that, if the court has any questions with regard to the speedy trial issue, I'm more than willing to answer those. Otherwise, I will save the rest of my time.
A little over 6 minutes left.
I understand that.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Katherine Hansen, registration number 25464, appearing on behalf of the people in this matter. I think it's important to go back in this case, since we're talking about provocation, and go back and talk about some general legal principles that are important, which I set forth in my brief. One is that mere arguments, words, and insults alone are insufficient to establish provocation. Even threats with the present ability to carry them out is not enough to establish provocation, although we have no evidence of actual threats made here. I cited several cases, which is even when combined with threats or words, a minor assault alone can't provide, though that combination can't provide provocation. When we look at a case like Castles, where provocation instruction was warranted, we had repeated threats, repeated disparaging comments. We had physical conduct on the part of the defendant. He stood near an item that he threatened to use as a weapon. Physical shoving, pushing. We had everything there. This is nothing like Castles. In fact, it's even less severe than Holloway, where a provocation instruction was not warranted. In Holloway, there was threats, there was words, there was even a minor third degree assault committed against the victim's, the defendant's girlfriend. And there, they found that just simply wasn't enough to warrant provocation. Now, the only evidence, and the reason why I say this, the only evidence we have that is relevant to the issue of provocation is the testimony of the defendant and his brother. It doesn't suggest that that alone couldn't be enough. It's just everything else that we had showed nothing relevant to the issue of provocation.
Samson, as far as the circumstances warranting a provocation instruction, what about the Roe case? Do you recall that case?
No, I don't.
Had to do with a fight in a bar where the bouncer kicked a fellow out. He was pounding on the door, and I believe, if I'm remembering it correctly, that the bouncer shot through the door, and there was a heat of passion instruction. And the heat of passion was simply this guy who had been ejected from the bar was pounding on the door and trying to get back in.
Well, I don't recall that case, and I may have read it in preparing for this brief.
It's cited in Mr. Sandler's brief.
Okay, so I guess I just determined that it wasn't factually similar. I don't know that they found, did they find provocation in that case?
Well, an instruction was given, a heat of passion instruction was given.
Well, so I don't think it would have been warranted in that case. And it certainly, that's much different from here. You had basically two individuals who, you know, it's kind of unclear if you look at the testimony of the victim and some of the witnesses and the testimony of the defendant and his brother. It's certainly all over the place regarding who got out first, or whether they stood in front of the car first, that who started talking to who first. I think it's even unclear who hit who. There's some general indication that the defendant hit Mr. Graham, and that's probably why he was convicted of assault against Mr. Graham.
If the testimony was all over the place, then why isn't it a jury question?
It was all over the place regarding what happened, but even considering every last piece, none of it amounts to provocation.
Ms. Hansen, given that in this case the defendant did testify, wouldn't he be in the best position to say or to give us facts that would support a provocation instruction to say, you know, these folks provoked me and this
Absolutely.
Is how?
Absolutely.
And he didn't do that in this case, did he?
He didn't do that. No. In fact, the discussion about the drugs and the mom on the drugs is, to me, just not an issue, because first of all, it was Damien that testified about the conversation and being upset about the drugs. The defendant at no point ever indicated that his reaction and his conduct, his actions, were because of the mother and the drugs. That was all Damien. So all we have is Mr. Moore, or the defendant in this case, basically claiming he's getting out because these guys are messing with his brother. He never says, I got out there, I was so angry, if anything, he got out there to protect his brother. At no point did he say, you know, I got out there because I was so angry with what they had done to my mom, or what they were encroaching on our turf, or any of this. He just never said that. And as Your Honor pointed out, he was the one that could have provided that specific information. He testified a lot about what he thinks happened, and that's why I say there's a lot of testimony that's kind of all over the place in terms of what happened. But at no point in any of that testimony is there indication that the defendant himself acted under a sudden heat of passion, that was his motivation, that was what was going on in his mind, that he was overwhelmed by emotion. And certainly the conduct itself, as much as it was inconsistent amongst the various witnesses, none of it was anything more than mere words and insults. Unless this court has any further questions, I would suggest that this court affirm on that ground as well as the other grounds in the answer brief. I'd be happy to answer any other questions. Thank you very much.
Okay, briefly. it occurs to me while we're sitting here arguing about this, it all comes down to one thing. It all comes down to whether or not Ms. Hansen believes there was enough provocation or whether or not Your Honors believe there's not provocation. But the bottom line is that's the question for the jury to determine whether or not there's provocation. I'm not here saying, nor is Mr. Moore here saying, that there was or there wasn't. The issue comes down to whether or not the jury could have made a determination, could have, a reasonable jury could have made a determination, accepting all the facts as true, as testified to by Mr. Moore, by both Mr. Moores, and discarding, completely discarding all the other testimony, as whether or not there was any evidence presented whatsoever, any scintilla of evidence whatsoever, whether or not there was provocation.
Well, isn't, pardon me, counsel, isn't there a role for the trial court judge to determine whether a reasonable person could, looking at the evidence, determine whether there was provocation or not? Isn't that a gatekeeping function of the trial court judge?
It is a gatekeeping function, but what happened here and what's happening here in this argument is whether or not we're looking to what this witness testified to, or what that witness testified to, or what the victim in this case testified to. But none of that matters if you look solely at what the evidence was that was presented. If you look solely at that, whether or not any reasonable person who's confronted with a situation, who has a sibling who died of a cocaine overdose, whose mother is clearly on drugs, and Dallas did testify to that, did testify to that about his brother's discussion with him about that, who then hears this individual mouthing off about them stepping on their territory, whether or not that's enough provocation, I think that's a jury question. And that's all that should have happened here. But instead, the judge simply took it upon himself to say, I don't believe that's enough provocation, and therefore.
Mr. Sandler, under your view, anytime there's a case that involves an angry street fight, would there need to be a provocation instruction or a heat of passion instruction?
No, there wouldn't. Because if you look at, you have to look at the situation. You have to look at the situation here. If it's just an angry street fight, no. Because whether or not an objectively reasonable person would by words alone become so enraged, no, that's not the situation at all. But what you have here is different. What you have here is it's somewhat akin to the situation where seeing a family member injured or hearing about a family member being injured, because when you put all this together, I think there's enough here. So it's not just any situation or any fight, because under that scenario, any fight whatsoever, because any fight whatsoever is by its very nature angry. So, of course, the exception would swallow up the rule.
One would think it would be by nature angry, so.
If the court doesn't have any further questions, I would ask that if the court does not accept our argument in the speedy trial issue, that the court find that the trial court should have given the provocation instruction, and therefore Mr. Moore is entitled to a new trial. Thank you.
Thanks to both counsel for your excellent arguments. The case will stand submitted, and an opinion will issue in due course.